Listen to today's roster report to hear all the updates on the Pats roster. Welcome back to the Roster Report Podcast. I'm Lori Baranski coming to you from Gillette Stadium on April 14th, and this is the official podcast of the New England Patriots. Make sure to listen to Brian Lowe, Andy Hart, Tom Casale, and Paul Perillo give you all the updates on the roster, hear who's been signed, and some thoughts on why so. So let's get started on the Roster Report.
Thanks very much, Laurie. We are back for a Patriots roster report, Patriots podcast on this Friday. And boy, do we ever have big news that came down on Wednesday afternoon. The re-signing, the signing to an extension for defensive lineman Richard Seymour. It's by far the biggest news item of this offseason, I would say.
At least in terms of positives.
When you talk about guys who have left, we've covered that. But Richard Seymour is here to stay at least for 4 years. That's the report, four-year contract, and numbers are around $30 million total. We've got Andy Hart and Tom Casale and Paul Perillo. Let's just get right into it. Were any of you surprised when this came down?
Yes.
You were surprised? Did you not think he was going to come back at all? Did you think it would be later
on? Well, I thought he would be here for the long term, but I thought it might get a little, you know, not ugly, but there might be a little back and forth, and it appears there wasn't that. It appears, based on the numbers we read, you know, $12 million up front, $19 in total bonuses, four-year deal with $30 million. That's a lot of money. And to add to that the fact that he's going to be a free agent again, you know, at the age of 30,
still
he can cash in again.
For him, sure.
I mean, to me, this is the perfect deal for a player. You get a lot of upfront money on a short-term deal.
And you still, if your career progresses as it's been, you're still going to have another
payday. So that's why I thought it would take a lot of money to get it done, and it did, and I think he got a great deal.
Yeah, I wasn't very surprised. I'm not saying this after the fact, just because the Patriots hadn't done that much yet in the offseason, and you had to figure they were working on something.
Because they had a lot of money in the salary cap, and it's yet to be seen where exactly this fits in.
So there was kind of some speculation they were going after Seymour and Branch to re-sign them to extensions, and that's what happened.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of being surprised, not necessarily that they were interested in re-signing a guy, because we know that the Patriots' free agent philosophy, for lack of a better word, I think that they've shown a propensity to kind of keep their own house in order first. That's their priority. It seems like re-signing their own free agents when possible, and then keeping key guys out of their free agent year. And we know that there's a lot of other guys, and we'll get to those probably in weeks to come, guys like Copen and Samuel and Daniel Graham and obviously Deion Branch. But they did this with Brady a year ahead of time. They did it with Jarvis Green. They did it with Mike Vrabel.
Yeah.
You know, so it was no surprise to me that they would want to do this with Seymour. Where I was surprised, and I agree with Andy, is that I thought it was going to take an awful lot of money, and he was going to be at the top of the list in terms of defensive linemen to get him signed, and that's why I didn't think it was going to happen, because I didn't think the Patriots would do that. I think they have done that. I think they've really stepped up to the plate here. And as just what Andy said, I think it's a very good deal for Seymour. I think it's a good deal for the team, too. But I think Seymour probably got about what he wanted and still has the flexibility at age 26 to be in this position again at the age of 30, presumably with another three or four Pro Bowls, maybe another Super Bowl under his belt, a couple more All-Pro nominations.
But even if he isn't, the name Richard Seymour is still going to mean something.
Yeah, you know, and Andy made the comment before we started. Willie McGinnis, at age 34, got $6 million in guaranteed money. Richard Seymour, at age 30, should be able to double that.
He should still be able to get a double-digit signing bonus on a deal at that time.
And the Patriots needed to step up to the plate, because this is a player they could not afford to lose.
Right.
I mean, if you lose a Richard Seymour, that's a domino effect on your whole defense. They had to re-sign him. They stepped up and took care of business.
And not just on the field. I think
in all areas,
Richard Seymour is a perfect set.
Just
the
look
right
at how
thing.
He handled himself yesterday. It just always. I mean, he's a thoughtful guy.
Perfect.
Even in a holdout, a situation where
I'll
you'd say
you
1,000% the player's wrong. He's holding. He's under contract. Your mainstream fan base would say the guy is wrong. He even handled that, in my opinion, so intelligently and so, you know, in such a classy manner that he didn't have an overwhelming groundswell against him among the fans.
What stands out to me, and Paul, I think we talked about this too, not only the holdout press conference that he had, I'm sorry, when he first came back to training camp last August, was phenomenal. when he stood at his locker room after the loss to Denver in the playoffs this year, and I know you agree because I know we talked about this, he had one of the more outstanding
aftermath.
He was just extremely thoughtful in what was certainly a precarious moment because the team had just lost, which is obviously an emotional thing when you have the standards of a Super Bowl. But he knew about his looming contract issue and that would be a topic, and he handled himself great. Now, just going back to how it's been with Seymour, when he was drafted in 2001, sixth overall, he signed a 6-year deal that was a total of, what was it? What was the total package?
I forget.
15 million, I don't know, something that was probably in line at the time.
Sounds about right.
And he's had some escalators.
Yeah,
he's paid well for this year. His
excelling on the field has definitely raised his revenue a little bit.
Right. He is a 3-time Super Bowl winner. At this point, he's a 4-time Pro Bowler. At this time a year ago, he was coming off a Super Bowl win, 3 Pro Bowls, and he still had 2 years on the contract, but we could all tell that something was looming, and he held out from the mini camps in the first week or so of training camp until they adjusted his deal for that year. So we've seen this over the course of about a year as something that was coming to fruition. In terms of the defensive line as a whole, I mean, they've got guys locked up for a couple years now, and they're young and they're improving. What do you make of the fact that the defensive line with Ty Warren, Vince Wilfork, even Jarvis Green is intact, young, and really dominant?
I just think they just need a little more depth, mm-hmm. especially inside. You know, Wilfork goes down.
Right.
But, the starting four guys there, that's as good as anyone has in the league pretty much.
But none of it really matters in my mind because I think all of those other guys are domino pieces that fall into place as long as Richard Seymour
right.
is lined
up. As we've
up.
Seen.
We've seen how important it is when he's out of the lineup. They just are not the same defense. And
exactly.
I've heard some talk with fans that, will he feel pressure or was he a contract player? I don't have any of those fears about Richard Seymour, and you're not going to see huge numbers, so I hope he's not criticized when he has 3.5 sacks and 62 tackles, because his game doesn't show up in the stat column. It's just the fact that other teams have to prepare for him, focus on him as the most dominant defensive lineman, and that makes life for Ty Warren, who freely admits it, and Vince Wilfork, who freely admits it, that much easier, not to mention the guys behind him when you start talking about Roosevelt Colvin.
And don't dismiss the fact that, not taking anything away from any other players, but, William McGinnis in the playoff game, 4.5 sacks, single game NFL postseason record. Is it a coincidence that he's rushing off the opposite edge of where Richard Seymour is and where, is it a coincidence that Roosevelt Colvin slowly, methodically makes his way back from a devastating hip injury and is kind of treading water? Some of the progress that we thought we had seen at the end of the 2004 season seemed to have stagnated a little bit in the middle of 2005. All of a sudden, Seymour returns to the lineup and Colvin is suddenly transformed back into this free agent guy that we all thought we were getting back in 2003 before the injury, making plays, rushing the passer, doing all kinds of things, playing right behind Richard Seymour. I think that dominoes is the way Andy put it, is exactly right. Everybody, he's one of those rare guys like Brady on offense that makes everybody around him better. And that's why I think those are the two most important pieces of the puzzle. Brady on offense, and they rightly extended him before he got to the point where he could look around, and Seymour on defense.
Yeah, and I don't need to see Seymour on offense anymore either. His fullback playing
games are
over.
That's a good
point.
Good point.
Just to touch on the numbers too a little bit, we're probably not going to hear the specific numbers. And there's also this item of note where a player cannot restructure his contract more than once in a 12-year period. So technically correct, this will not come into place until this August. But if the numbers we're hearing.
Well, there's conflicting reports on that. According to Michael Felger, the new contract
takes effect immediately.
They did some creative things to get around that rule. That's been reported about 10 different ways in 10 different places,
yeah.
So we may not find out the
specifics. And it's something that doesn't come up too often. That might be why.
Well, in researching this a little bit on Wednesday, Andy, Tom, and I, and Fred, we're looking in the CBA, and the rule said that you couldn't get a raise twice in the same 12-month period. And I know a lot of people are writing you can't redo a contract, can't restructure a contract. I don't know if that's just kind of an oversight or if there's something specific in the language now in the new CBA, which is a little bit different. But we were looking at the CBA that actually has been overturned, the one that was set to expire through 2007, the uncapped year. That's no longer in play. The new one isn't published yet.
Right.
So I don't know if that's strictly the semantics of it, right, that a raise you can't get, because that it's very easy to get around that, I think. I
mean, the word raise is vague, because a guy's salary when he gets an extension,
right,
could dip.
His salary generally goes down, and his total money for that
year goes up. Is it the base salary that you're talking about?
Right.
Does the bonus not count?
And
if so, does the bonus, maybe he gets the bonus in August?
The only question I have is it truly a four-year extension,
right,
which goes on the end of this next season?
Right. Which is how we understood it on Wednesday. But now we're not so sure.
Or if it's a new deal, does it start immediately? And 09 is the final series.
Right.
That's the only question I have there. Because other than that, it's a technicality. It's when it's actually signed and goes into effect and cap and all that. But I wonder if just the loophole would be, you know, his salary, he was slated to get 2.02 this year. His salary goes down to $1 million because he just got a check for $12 million.
Yeah.
Signing bonus.
Right,
so, you know, it could be one of those technicalities.
Tom threw out the name Dion Branch. Do we see that happening, a Dion Branch extension happening before the next season?
I actually thought that one was more likely to come because you're talking lesser dollars and things. So I kind of expected that one to come first. You know, everybody says, well, he's probably going to look at the David Givens contract and go upward from there.
Starting point.
Which I think is fair. I mean, I think that's fair. He was the number one on this team. I think his leverage has increased when they lost David Givens and don't have a number two. And, you know, they could ill afford to lose Dion Branch and have nobody left.
If he hits the market, they're going to have to pay much more for him than if they get him right now.
Right.
Because if Givens got what he got, Branch is going to get more than that. So they might as well get him all tied up right now. It's the smart thing to do and not let him hit the open market.
And he seems like one of their guys on a lot of different levels in terms of the things he says, in terms of them holding him out of preseason to make sure that he is healthy when the season comes, performing on the biggest stage. On a lot of levels, I feel like Dion Branch is one of, maybe not a Brady level guy, but next tier locker.
When you say they, I'll even go one further. I don't think Tom Brady would be too happy if Dion Branch left. I think that's a guy that
the current situation, no doubt.
Tom, I know for a fact that he wasn't too happy that Givens left either, and he did. So, but I do know that the coaching staff thinks an awful lot of Dion Branch. They do consider him a number one receiver. Not just the Patriots number one. They like him a lot. I don't think there's a lot of guys. Now, we can all, the four of us can disagree, maybe come up with several examples, but I don't think there are a lot of guys in this league that they'd rather have as their top receiver than Branch. And they don't really put numbers on things anyway. They have receivers. They don't have number one, number two, number three. They have a guy that plays the X, the Y, and the Z, whatever. That's all they care
Deion
about.
Dion Branch may be putting a number on it. I'm a number one.
Well,
see all these lists of other number ones, add them up and average out their deals.
And
give
that's
me one
why
of those.
I think it's interesting, and I agree with everything that both Andy and Tom just said. Andy about the starting point with the Givens contract, and Tom about the bargaining power that the Patriots may have by doing a year early, because he's not actually a free agent.
Right.
So that gives the team a little bit of leverage, whereas Branch has the leverage of saying, look, I'm really the only proven receiver you have right now in his prime. And Givens just got this, you know, that's my starting point.
And he's a guy that's had some injuries, so giving him a big deal a year early would have some value to him.
The question I would have is, do the Patriots step up again and put that kind of, maybe dollars that we're not really expecting the Patriots to dole out, do they do it again for Branch? Because I agree with you, Andy. I think Givens is 5-year, $24 million or whatever. I think that's a starting point, and I think Branch is going to want to go up from there. Do the Patriots go up from there?
The other question is how, if they use their cap money creatively, is a topic we've broached before. With all this cap money, do they do something where there's, you know, a roster bonus in year one, so you're not on the hook on the back end of the deal for a lot of prorated money,
and
do it, you know, almost like the Vikings did a couple of years ago with
Antoine Winfield.
Antoine Winfield gave him a $10 million bonus up front on that year's deal, not prorated. You got that money; it was on the cap.
It was a
this
roster
year.
Bonus, not a signing.
So
bonus.
It'll be interesting if they use it in that way somehow.
Well, Richard Seymour, the extension is certainly the biggest news item this week. Just to mention as well, the Patriots did re-sign exclusive rights free agent cornerback Randall Gay. He's been with the team for 2 years, and since his contract was up and he has less than 3 years of service in the NFL, he's an exclusive rights free agent. The team, really, unless the Patriots at a certain date, I'm not sure what the date was, had not signed him up to that point, he's the property of the Patriots or no one else. So he's on board, and that's the that's what we have so far for this roster report on this specific Friday. We will, of course, be with you every Friday, including next Friday, the Patriots roster report. Before that, though, there is our draft Prospect Review podcast. And this Tuesday, we'll be talking about the defensive linemen. Next Thursday, it will be the tight ends. And keep in mind as well, try your hand at the draft with the Patriots Football Weekly Mock Draft Contest and win Patriots gear. Andy's excited about that.
I am.
Go to pfwonline.com.
Andy was already scoffing at some of the early entries that we received.
Is that right? Well, despite that, despite what you might hear from Andy Hart, just go to pfwonline.com now and click the Mock Draft Contest link to participate. More about the draft, you can go to the Patriots.com draft section and find out more about the draft prospects. It's patriots.com/draft/2006. And still more about the draft. Draft weekend is coming up just about 2 weeks away. PFW in progress with the three people who I'm with today, Paul Perillo, Andy Hart, and Tom Caselli, along with Fred Kirsch from 3 to 6 on Saturday, the 29th of April, which should be during the time that the Patriots select, and then also Sunday from 12 to 3 on Patriots.com. So that's going to do it for this roster report. Thanks to Paul Perillo, Andy Hart, Tom Caselli. I'm Brian Lowe. Let's go back to Laurie.
Thanks, guys, and thank you for listening. Come back soon. Go Pack!